war, that we are able to hold them accountable. That is radical. Up is down, down is up. This is an incredible, incredible encyclopedia of information. Again, it's called Counterintelligence. It is a 5-DVD set. Okay, Counterintelligence, 5-DVD set, $250 by itself, $20.83 a month. If you put it on your credit card and do a payment plan, you can make multiple copies of this. Metanoia Films says that you are welcome to do that. It has rave reviews all over the place. And it features folks like Michael Parenti, Peter Phillips, Larry Pinkney, James Petras, Glenn Greenwald, who you just heard, John Perkins, Nafiz Ahmed, John Judge, Christopher Simpson, Ray McGovern, Russ Baker, Bill Christensen, William Blum, and so many more. Okay, I just came back from the phone room. I have an update. I need just 10. I just need 10 of you to call up and get Counterintelligence, the 5-DVD set. You can do that by calling this number, 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Please realize that I'm only playing tiny portions of this 5-DVD set called Counterintelligence. It is so vitally important. If you have the Oliver Stone's Untold History of the United States, you want to get this as well, because this is about America's secret wars. This is about the secret stuff that they don't want you to know about. But they tell you through folks like Robert Steele, former CIA officer, but William Blum, Peter Phillips, Larry Pinkney. So many people are in this. It is a fantastic, fantastic thank you gift, and you can make multiple copies of it. So make as many copies as you like and hand them out freely. Again, it's $20.83 a month. You can become a member of this station, support the station, stand up and support truth-seeking, truth-telling. So vitally important in this era of 1984, of George Orwell's 1984 becoming a reality. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Okay, I want to play more clips because we have a little bit of time left, but I got to get more people on the lines. Folks, this is why you tune in. This is why you support this radio station, so that we can bring you this information. This is not going to be covered on NBC, CBS, ABC. None of those stations are going to cover it, but only here, and we only can do it through your contributions. Hey, keep those calls coming in. Let's listen now to more from Counterintelligence.
These kinds of operations, they're effective in the short run, particularly because all the information comes from the U.S. government. And secondly, the media is so submissive to relay whatever the government says happened rather than investigate in greater depth the circumstances surrounding these false flag operations. So they're successful to the degree in which they monopolize the government and the mass media conform to the message which has been sent out.
In light of the immense historical consequences of false flag operations, one might assume that they would be the subject of continual and extensive study by journalists and scholars. Yet, if anything, the opposite is true. False flags remain one of the biggest taboos in journalism. In order to sidestep the issue and deep politics as a whole, many journalists and academics have created a workaround. They call it conspiracy theory.
How much would you attribute the increase in conspiratorial thinking to that red line?
There has been an explosion of conspiracy theories flying fast and furious over the internet.
Those conspiracy people,
a lot of the conspiracy theories, of course, 9/11 conspiracy theory goes back to the Bush era.
I'm Jesse Ventura, and this is conspiracy theory.
A conspiracy mongering
fringe conspiracy theorist.
Conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theorists.
The people who foment conspiracy theories, crazy conspiracy theories, full-blown American conspiracy theories are a great American pastime. And not all of them are on the right. There's plenty on the left as well.
Ever told a soul about it. In fact, they engage in a vast conspiracy.
You get accused of being a conspiracy theorist, speculation, conspiracy theories.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
Painting this type of picture only feeds the delusions of those who wear tinfoil hats around their house.
You know, there have always been crazy people who gravitate, if they have schizophrenia, who gravitate toward conspiracy theories.
Those true believers in the mystic power of New Age crystals, spirit channeling, of people who talk to trees.
Now, I don't consider myself a conspiracy buff at all, but when they get a lot of coincidences, I get a little suspicious.
how does this term conspiracy theory get used, and what are the purposes that it's used for? Conspiracy theory is a little bit like the word propaganda, and it's used specifically to discredit someone and to say, in effect, you're nuts, you're making it up, or you don't know you don't have knowledge about this, or that you're irrational. That's the description of a conspiracy theory. So that is a very effective way, and frequently used in the mass media and by media commentators and reporters as a means of discrediting points of view that they don't agree with.
Conspiracy theory is a term that's used whenever anybody ascribes conscious intent to people with power. So I can say to you that school teachers are concerned about their salaries, and they're organizing, and they're threatening a strike, and they're pressuring. I can say to you that farmers are doing this and looking for subsidies and facing certain policies. But the minute I say to you that the very people at the top, the plutocracy, the very rich and powerful, the ones who own most of America, that they are consciously pursuing power and wealth, someone will come along and say, what do you have, a conspiracy theory? Or they'll say, oh, you're cynical or you're paranoid. Their view is that stuff just happens. Things just happen, unintended consequences, or our leaders are stupid and they're jerks, or they're confused and they don't know any better. And, of course, the critic knows much better than everybody else.
That was Michael Parenti from Counterintelligence. This is a 5-DVD set, hours upon hours of powerful information that you do need to know. You need to know this information. Again, that was Michael Parenti, but there's so many other folks that are in this. Robert Steele, Russ Baker, we have Nafiz Ahmed, Ray McGovern, John Judge, James Petras is in this as well, Glenn Greenwald, and so many others. Folks, I only have about 2 minutes to go, and I need to get as many of you on the phone right now as possible. Before, I don't even know how close I am to getting the 10 people that I needed, but it's real simple. I need at least $2,000 this hour to make my goal. So for those of you who are able to call up right now and pledge support for $20.83 a month, okay? $20.83 a month, you'll be supporting a radical radio station that actually has the ability to tell you the truth, to shine a light on black operations. There is no other institution that can do it. There's no other immediate outlet that would allow anybody to do it. But here at KPFK, here at Pacifica Radio, we have the ability. As of right now, we have the ability. We may not always have that ability, but please call up right now and support this. Counterintelligence, the 5-DVD set, $20.83 a month, $250 pledge if you put it all on your credit card and get the funds into this radio station, which is what we need. You can pledge securely at kpfk.org, or better yet, call up and speak with a phone answer. We have volunteers right now that are running in to answer your phones. Call up and say thank you to them for answering the calls today, and call this number, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Pledge $250, get Counterintelligence, the 5-DVD set. And you can make as many copies of this film as you like. You make as many as you want. 500, 5,000, doesn't matter. You can burn as many copies as you like and hand them out freely to high schools, colleges. Have a film screening. Talk about this with your neighbors. It is a vitally important information. Again, if you like Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone, you're going to love Counterintelligence from Metanoia Films. 5 discs in all. The number again is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I have less than a minute. I have like 30 seconds to go. Okay, 30 seconds to get as many of you on the phone as possible. If there's someone who can pledge at the $1,000 level, please do it right now. You heard a lot of content. I tried to play as much content as I could. Again, doesn't even scratch the surface of how much material is on this 5-disc set. But if you can pledge at the $1,000 level, do it right now, please. Thank you so much. I want to thank Federico in Master Control. I'm Christine Blasdale. Stay tuned for more Fund Drive programming coming your way. That number again is 818-985-5735.
K
KPFK would certainly appreciate your volunteer time to help staff the phone bank during the fund drive. If you would like to volunteer at our phone bank, please come on down to KPFK at 3729 Cahuenga West in North Hollywood, or go to kpfk.org for more information. You get to meet other super cool KPFK fans like you. Again, come on down to KPFK at 3729 Cahuenga West in North Hollywood, or give us a call at 818-985-2711, Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. Once again, come on down and help us out. Thank you for your help.
This is Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics and author of Parallel Worlds and Hyperspace. And whenever I'm in Los Angeles, I tune in.
Thank you for calling in, Triton. You should call us back, I don't know, every half hour so it feels like you're hosting with us.
I probably should because we need some star power, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I do know what you mean.
And also because I can't listen on the radio, so I call in, it makes me at least feel like I'm involved.
And DJ Grantham and I are having a sober night because we're kind of sick and tired. So we're being really boring. We're reading National Geographic and just kind of...
Oh my God, I bet no one is listening. Am I the first caller?
No, we've had like 80,000. The phone keeps lighting up, but you're important.
By which we mean I'm the first caller?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, so basically, like, no one's listening right now, and this is us, like, having a regular phone conversation pretending, like, people are listening.
And with that, thank you, Triton, for calling in.
So
you've been
positive.
Listening to Lesbians on Ecstasy in the background. Before that, we had Emily by Switchblade Kittens, which was an Emily Dickinson poem set to an all-female band. And before that, I think we were playing Upside Down the Building by Cobra Killer, if I'm not wrong. Thanks for calling, Triton. Thanks for listening, everybody who's listening.
I'll think of you when I'm eating at In-N-Out off of a freeway. It's going to be really cool.
Oh, my God. Animal fries.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Okay, here comes the Body Snatchers. Do rock and steady.
Man, coming up next on Free Radio. It's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, the Thursday edition. Today is October 20th, 2016. Stay tuned for updates of all kinds and your thoughts as well if you call in. Stay with me.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. I'll be with you for 2 hours until 8. Maybe you'll be with me. There is a call-in number in case you wish to record any breaking news, any new shootings by the police department, perhaps, any harassment of homeless people on the streets by the Rangers, any positive stuff that you think needs to be talked about, or just any reactions to what you're hearing on the radio. The call-in number is 427-3772. 427-FRSE. These are the initials of our struggling station, Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're still looking for a transmitter site. That would be any place where you, once with a clear 30-foot high antenna, the antenna could look down on at least most of Santa Cruz, which means it couldn't be in the depressed area right in the downtown area, unless we could stick ourselves on top of a five-story building, like the county building. That would be an excellent idea. Unfortunately, I don't know if we'd last long up there. We are an illegal station, but we have never been taken to court. We are always just sort of chased out of wherever we go, and so we continue to survive a sort of twilight existence, and yet one which has its compensations, because you get to hear our voices, and we get to hear yours. So we need a transmitter site. We'll supply a little rental money for you. All you got to do is supply power, and internet and a place to put up an antenna. Second story of a building, nearby tree, a dirigible balloon if you have one all the time, which nobody does, so that would be a facetious comment on my part. But do get in touch. Freakradio.org is where you go to get in touch with us. Also, you can find some schedules of some of the shows of some of the programmers. You can find the general schedule of the radio station there. Sometimes a little behind the times, but updated more recently. You can find applications if you want to become a radio, free radio broadcaster. We need broadcasters. We have space for them. We have time for them. All of it really is up to you. You get in touch with us, and we will see if you meet our rather liberal standards. So, let's begin. This show, of course, mainly concerns itself with folks outside and folks who are on the edge of getting outside, as well as sort of problems that activists have in getting issues before the community and before the so-called city council, given the kinds of restrictions that the people in power place on, barriers, blocks to any really meaningful consideration of issues like rent control or restoration of civil rights for homeless people or sensible set of procedures for the police department so they don't shoot people 20 seconds after they show up, as happened reportedly by the Sentinel in the case of Sean Arlt, whose name I may be pronouncing properly, but I have no idea. The guy was shot to death on Sunday morning because he had a rake in his hand. I understand it was a metal rake, not a wooden rake, at least that's what they say, and that he threatened the police officers with his rake. And so he was shot four times by at least one, if not more, of the four police officers, if not more, who were there on the scene after having failed to taser him. And it's interesting, this has provoked some debate in the Sentinel online, usually disgustingly reactionary discus commentary area where anybody can post comments and usually do, mostly sort of fuck you hippies, get out of town, damn you liberals, that sort of thing. How could our police department do anything wrong? You know, what was that guy doing with a rake anyway, sort of comments. But there's been some of the contrary as well. And I was sorry to report that at last night's rental forum or renters forum, I wasn't there for all of it, but for those who were, at least one person I contacted and got a report from, and during the period of time I was there, there was no mention of this murder, homicide, if you will, of this family man and writer, Sean Arlt. It needs to be mentioned, and it needs to be mentioned loudly and clearly. There is a protest coming up. It actually is coincidental. There is an annual event called No Police Brutality Day, actually. It happens every year, October 22nd, across the country. Has been going on, some say, since the Rodney King beatings way back in Los Angeles in 1992 or 91. I think it's 92. Some say more recently it's been kind of formulated into a more annual, clearly defined, regularly held event. But in Santa Cruz, it's been sporadic. I've been to a number of them, and the issue for me often is not just the general police brutality across the country, but particular problems in Santa Cruz that remain unaddressed, but that we, the local people, have the power to raise the issue about in ways that aren't just symbolic or a fundraising activity for the American Civil Liberties Union or a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle or, you know, a mention in a meeting of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. We can actually raise issues together with voices that to some extent may force the authorities to take notice or at least the community, to take notice, and the community will then decide if it wants to respond further. As communities across the country, some nonviolently, some more violently, have responded to police murders nationwide, mostly the problem being, of course, murders of people of color, murders of African Americans, Native Americans, Mexican Americans. But any murders by these armed thugs, this Praetorian Guard, this uniform group of privileged life takers is wrong, except in the most exceptional circumstances, in my view. And the real, of course, problem with the police is not just the fact that they kill people and threaten to kill people, but that they are essentially a class of property protectors for the well-to-do. And they protect the rules that the well-to-do have created to maintain a kind of caste system and class system, even here in Santa Cruz. You don't see too many folks of color at work, except in the menial jobs, in the kitchens, as the waiters, and so forth. And certainly fewer and fewer folks are living here, given the skyrocketing rents and the profiteering that goes on. Anyway, I'm going to turn from my rather predictable tirade here, which you may or may not agree with, but many of you who listen to the station regularly probably do, to hear what the voices are from folks who are out there on the streets. Tonight, we're out there on the stormy weekend, some of whom face police harassment. Yes, our men and women in blue, some of them in white. The Rangers are wearing white these days, not quite covering their heads like the Klan, but to some extent covering up their procedures. I was trying to get a straight answer out of a Ranger a couple of nights ago, and I was referred instead to the administrative offices, although he, I believe, knew full well the answer to my question, which had to do with how long is his shift. He wouldn't tell me. Anyway, so, and that's public information, and there's no reason he shouldn't, and he may not have liked my little audio recorder nearby, but he's a city official. His responsibility is to, I think, answer reasonable questions from the community about matters that concern him and what he does, assuming we're not getting personal or abusive. Although that seems to be the job of the police and Rangers toward the homeless folks and toward poor people generally, who are tripped up by the network of laws that make it very difficult to be in public, often for street performers or for vendors who have to move along every hour from performance box to performance box, but be 100 feet down the road at least, and don't come back for 24 hours, and so forth. Anyway, let's hear a little from somebody on the streets who's been on the streets for quite a while. You may have seen him. Let's go into that now. And also expecting a phone call at 10:30 from 6:30 from Marysville, activists who are described to me earlier that they're facing bulldozers and their homeless property being hauled away, but they apparently have taken a page from Mike Rhodes' book. He's the Fresno activist who documented the destruction of homeless property in Fresno way back in 2006 or 7. And they were able to interest lawyers who, when seeing the careful documentation of items that were obviously not trash being destroyed by the police and other authorities there in a systematic and unapologetic way, said, hey, here's a chance for us lawyers to make some money, because you can win money for your services, even in civil rights lawsuits, even more, I believe, but just you can get a... You can get damages, and you can get more. You can get legal. The defendants or the plaintiffs, if they're suing, can get damages. But those who are doing the work, the attorneys, can get paid. And the attorneys, as you know, charge astronomical amounts of money to do the job of going to court, which should be, of course, a right and something we're all informed about doing, but is not. Anyway, let's hear a little from, I guess his name is Jeffrey Stewart.
Jeffrey Stewart.
And Jeff, as I sort of mentioned you when I, should I call you Jeffrey or Jeff?
Jeff is all right.
You know, you're a man with a vest, you got a tie on, your pants are pressed, you even have shoes. They may not be completely shined, but they're certainly at least as shined as mine are. In other words, I say the best-dressed man on the avenue. So how have things changed? You're a performer yourself. Mr. Man on the Street, what's your name, sir?
Gabriel.
Gabriel, how long have you been strumming here in front of Palomar?
And that's a pity. I thought for some reason that whole interview got dumped. But Jeffrey's a tall, lanky fellow, looks kind of like a cowboy. I think he has a cowboy hat. He's been a performer on Pacific Avenue, not so much anymore at all. He spoke with some bitterness about the ordinances that essentially had forced him away and the kind of police activity that was going on. I don't want to misquote him, so I'll just leave it at that and apologize to folks for not having that interview. I'm surprised. I don't quite know what happened to it. But, well, here's some more from other folks on the street.
About 2 years now, I think.
And aside from getting paper cranes and pennies, how's it going?
I love it, regardless.
And do you have anything you've composed yourself you want to sing?
Yeah, I was just going to play a song.
Played you on the radio the other day, Nate.
I'm sitting around the railway station waiting on you, but you have one more chance. Well, to tell the truth, was there, will take me back, my baby, and I won't tell a lie. While all the ladies in my past, they just watch me walk by. They say, well, spend your time and dollars while we're digging for dimes. They say, well, life's a real hit, baby, let's roll down the line. We'll put the mop in the bucket, put the paint on the brush, and get the dustpan up and sweep it up. I'm staring out the window as the highway rolls by. When I was staring at the birds on a wing in the sky, was there, well, feeling like a ball and further winding nowhere. Up these mountain roads at the end of each day. Well, now, well, darkness creeps around me, well, it starts off to fall. Let's have another day done. Yeah, we all start to crawl back to our sleeping thoughts, rolling round and round in our head. We'll turn the lights out now. Said it's time, that I said, come on, we'll spend your time and dollars while we're digging for dimes. We said, well, life's a real here, baby, let's roll down the line. We'll put the mop in the bucket, put the paint on the brush, and get the dustpan out. Slowly, well, we're surfing through space. Come on, well, time's an ocean. Now we'll watch it curl with the wick. All the fish in the sea and all the birds in the sky. Well, hell, they whistle out the street. You spend your time and dollars while we're digging for dimes to tell. Well, life's a little bit. Roll down the line, we'll put the mop in the bucket. Put the paint on the brush. Get the dustpan out.
And we've been listening to the music of
Gabriel.
And what do you call that tune, Gabriel? Or do you?
Spend. Yeah.
Okay. Should be on free radio tomorrow night. Congratulations. Now you're studio famous.
Thank you.
Any other comment? All right, that's it. And I pulled over along Highway 9.
But I don't think that's as interesting as it might be, so let's move on to the next item. Last weekend, I was tabling during a break in the storm for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, and the Free Radio Santa Cruz, at the UN, what you call it? It's, I guess it's a celebration every year of the United Nations, and I'm essentially, what I'm doing isn't about the United Nations at all. It is more about civil rights in Santa Cruz and discrimination against folks here. But I suppose, you know, the United Nations might be an appropriate group to call in to challenge the behavior of some of the authorities here. In any case, did a few interviews, and I'm going to play them.
UN tabling on Cooper Street, Shindig. It's about 1:10. I'm talking with
Marshall.
And Marshall, you say that police and rangers have backed down and backed off recently?
Yes, they have. They've been inspecting the people a lot more because they know we're down and out. We ain't got nothing. So they've been giving us a chance to make sure we just go to sleep and, you know, have a place to keep our stuff. And they watch out for it. And they also have been helping us. I mean, we clean up ourselves, but they make sure they look out for us.
Who's we? You and how many other people?
About 30 other people.
And where is this? Or should I ask?
Well, it's in their park, San Lorenzo.
And what? So you're saying the police are actually tolerating people sleeping in San Lorenzo Park?
Yes, I think so.
Because during the night as well?
Yes, because they don't know the place to go. So it's good. Thanks to Robert North that I think this comes about, that people are starting to see that everybody's people, and maybe they'll help, like everybody else is trying to help the community. It should come together.
So when was the last time you were sleeping in San Lorenzo Park?
2 days ago.
And how many were sleeping there with you?
About 30 people.
And where in the park was this, if you wish to say?
Well, it's on the field, like the long field away from the courthouse.
And what period of time did you sleep there, from when to when?
I'd say about 2 weeks now. I got there 2 weeks.
And
so,
let's say on night before last, how long a period were you sleeping in the park?
Probably about a month, maybe. So total.
1 minute?
No, about a month.
A month. But I mean, total. For that day, for that night, were you there the whole night?
Yeah, the whole night. But during the day, we get up, you know, pack our stuff up, make sure we clean up the garbage, whatever the garbage, and, you know, I get our stuff organized and find out what we got, errands and stuff to do. We help somebody watch it, and we leave and come back. It's better. It's a lot better.
And this includes the Rangers or just the police?
Both. Rangers and the police.
And so, do people generally leave all their stuff there, or how much stuff is left during the day there for people, another person to watch, if that's what happens?
Usually about like their bedding, like maybe about whatever they need to sleep in, like about four blankets, sleeping bag, an average person, a person to stay warm, about four bags a piece.
And how many people leave their stuff there?
They always about maybe 10 or 12 people leave their stuff, but some people don't trust, so they stay with their stuff all day.
And is there someone else who watches the other stuff?
Yeah, just, we take turns. People take turns. Like one group here over here take watch that stuff, while the other ones take off, do errands or whatever. And the other ones take off, they do the same. They just quit. It's like a switch move. That's it.
How long has this tolerated policy been going on?
I'd say about maybe a month, as far as I know.
About a month, you say?
Yeah, about a month.
Well, it sounds positive to me. I've got just the opposite report from yesterday from somewhere else in the city. So it looks like different police or different groups are getting different treatment. Again, it's hard to say. I wasn't there. You at least were. And we've been talking with
Marshall.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you, Robert.
And Marshall's description is kind of unique in my experience the last few weeks in terms of, well, even longer. There are a few exceptions of positive reports, individual encounters with the police. But the folks I've been talking to, maybe they just choose to say nothing, who are having no problems of any kind or getting positively treated by police. But it is a fairly rare occurrence to hear that 30 people or 20 people are regularly being allowed to sleep in a public park after dark, which is two kinds of crime. One is being in a park after dark, which is illegal, and another is sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, which is also illegal. Of course, those are both ridiculous laws that criminalize people who have no real choices, and the Justice Department believes they're unconstitutional, or at least that's what they set up in Boise, Idaho, if there's no shelter places for them, and in Santa Cruz there isn't, because the only place where you can get shelter is at the homeless lack of services centers, Pauley Loft. If you have a pathway to housing already, like checks, or government checks, or vouchers, or some such thing, so homeless folks generally who have no legal place to go will continue to have no legal place to go. And continue to find harassment around the city, at least that, as I said, has been the general tenor of the reports I'm getting. But this is a good report. I mean, this is good. I wish I could get confirmation of it from someone else. I don't think Marshall is telling us a story. I think he's telling us his own experience. But I just don't know what to think. I'm going to continue playing these accounts from last Saturday until I get a call from Marysville, where I'm hoping to hear from Raylan Butcher, and who knows who else. She may have some other folks who have joined her in resisting the bulldozing of the homeless property and the homeless housing, the housing that they create themselves, whether it's tents or wooden structures or just a damn sleeping bag on the ground.
And it's the raging grannies.
Santa Cruz water is wholesome and clear, for it comes from the rock and the river. But what should we do when the rains so choose to fall and the blue skies refuse to deliver? Oh, we'll save our rainfall in barrels and bins, and we'll not waste a drop in our showers. Our wastewater goes to our garden's thirsty plants, and they'll thank us with veggies and flowers. Oh, in
a much smaller event than in the last year, and we have, I guess, 11 tables or so, talking to my audience, actually. It looks like we have about one-third the number of people here as last year, but we do have Joel Kappa. Joel, do you have an update for us, preferably not as endlessly way historical as I feared?
Oh, no, it's come present. I'm going to head to my thing here. Like, to be continued.
All right. So Joel will be back, perhaps. So, Dennis, you have a show on Free Radio. What's that show about, and when is it happening?
Okay, well, it's still in the formative stages. It's the Anti-Imperialist Hour. At least that's a tentative name for the show. Uh-huh. And it's basically a show to debunk the imperialist propaganda that we're subject to on a 24/7 basis. The struggle against U.S. imperialism is the primary struggle in the world today. And nothing's going to happen of a progressive sort until U.S. imperialism is defeated. So I hope my show will
What kind of manifestations do U.S. imperialism, where can we find its evil head rising here in Santa Cruz?
Oh, well, you know, imperialism is based on state oppression of people across the world and at home. So the same policies that we pursue overseas, we begin implementing, here domestically.
Give me some examples in Santa Cruz.
Well, in Santa Cruz, you're talking about all these restrictive ordinances that basically contribute to the criminalization of marginalized people. That's what we're doing throughout the world. We're criminalizing, people who have no power and who are resisting the efforts of the U.S. to impose fascistic rule, across the planet. So it's happening here in Santa Cruz and throughout the country.
Any specific ordinances you have in mind?
Well, any of the ordinances that are meant to criminalize those who have the least power. So you're talking about, the houseless situation, people without houses, forced to live on the streets and become criminalized for doing so. We're all familiar with the type of ordinances, sleeping bans and sweeps of encampments. Rather than supporting encampments and making resources available, the object is to force these people to to constantly be on the move. It's constant harassment that's ongoing.
Now, will you be discussing the local implications or mostly foreign stuff?
Well, I mean, I'll be drawing drawing parallels and showing how it's relevant to the struggle here at home. But I'm going to focus mostly on the international situation because no one else seems to be doing that. There's very few people in this country who take an anti-imperialist, anti-fascist
stance. RT, the Russian news media?
Well, I mean, they have some good stuff. I mean, and I wouldn't call it Russian news media. Most of the people on RT, U.S., are, U.S., journalists. Yeah,
like Stoops, perhaps?
No, what kind of nonsense is that? Tom Hartman and Larry King. I don't think Putin.
Liberal weenies of some kind?
No, they're just people who have been embargoed by the mainstream media, and they find that, Russia Today is at least giving them a forum by which they can present their views.
So once more, when can we hear your show, and what day?
Well, from what I gather, it's going to be Saturdays from Saturdays 4 to 6.
That's
and
actually
probably
today.
Within a couple of weeks, I would think.
And that will be the anti-imperialist hour.
Yes.
You can go to freakradio.org or 101.3 FM if we're still broadcasting.
Okay.
We've been talking with
Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. Okay. So we're talking with
Thomas.
Thomas, you have a T-shirt, Keep Tucson Shitty, and there's a nebulous picture. What does that picture signify?
To me, it's a man with a bow tie and a mustache.
Okay, rather grotesque-looking fellow. So you have a family in Tucson.
I have a family in Tucson.
You're not houseless there, but you probably have some sense of what... Why is Tucson a shitty city?
I think it's a shitty city because the state and local government often does not support... It's a libertarian place, and so a lot of times the state and county governments don't support local infrastructure or public infrastructure.
So in other words, if you have a fire in your house, you have to pay the fire department to come out and put it out.
I don't know if that's the case.
We haven't gone that far yet.
No, we haven't. It's not Ayn Rand's wet dream. But
that's Ayn Rand to you, buddy.
Oh, sorry. Ayn Rand.
Actually, no.
She's Russian, though.
Yeah, well, Hitler and Rand would have been on different sides.
Yes, they would not have seen eye to eye.
No.
But, no, there's a lot of issues. There's a huge homeless population in Tucson. And for about starting with the Occupy Wall Street movement, there was a little group in Tucson that occupied a park downtown. Right.
Were you a part of that group?
I was not a part of that group because I was not in Tucson at the time. But I like this story because it sort of illustrates what the situation is there. There's a lot of people that come to Tucson that are snowbirds that come there, at just for the winter, because that's the part of the year that's actually worth being in Tucson for. But there's a lot of homeless people that come at that time as well as wealthy people. But so what happened was during Occupy Wall Street, everybody was camped out in this park downtown. And so the local, some of the local activists applied for permits to be able to camp in the park. So
the Constitution is their permit.
Sure, but they applied to city government so that there wouldn't be issues with the local police. And they actually had permission, and they created these pods for the homeless people to sleep in. And so they actually were able to have a temporary, almost temporary housing for the homeless population for a while. That lasted for a couple of months, and then the business owners downtown started getting really upset because there was no toilets provided for Nobody wanted to spring for the porta potty, even though they had the permits for the pods and everything, but the city wouldn't give them permits for sanitation.
No, it wasn't that they didn't want to spring for it; it's they were banned from having them.
They were banned.
That's why it's the shitty city.
Not quite banned, but they weren't given the
legal authority,
and they wanted to do everything legally, obviously, and so the permit. The permit expired, and the city refused to renew it.
This is the one for the pods, you mean?
Yeah, for the pods.
Or for the occupied space.
And so that has since been disbanded.
Was it forcibly disbanded by police?
Yes, probably. People still sleep on the sidewalk there. And I don't think that they are forcibly moved, but I don't know for sure because I'm not there all night long or anything
Well,
like that.
Well, we will expect you to find out immediately all the details in Tucson and get back to us with the update.
There is a homeless encampment on an empty lot that somebody has donated for that use. And there's four rather large, I want to say picnic tents, these big...
Circus tents?
Not quite circus tents, but where you would have a banquet or something that
Civilian.
Are temporary, something like that. There's four or five of these set up on the west side of town, just before South Tucson, which is another city. It's on 21st.
Yeah, these are current.
Or something. Yeah, I just rode by it the other day, and that's how I discovered it. So what?
How many people are there?
I don't know, but it's quite a lot. Quite a lot.
Thousands, hundreds, 50.
I'd say hundreds, probably.
Okay. And does it have a name? This place?
I don't know because I just discovered it the other day. I was unaware of it until I rode by it, and in the park there's quite a few organizations that come and do food they distribute food to the homeless there, and I had seen that driving down 22nd a bunch of times, but I didn't realize. I had always asked myself, why are there so many homeless people in this park? And so I discovered the other day the reason why is because there's a camp there now for them that I think was...
If you build it, they will come. Yeah. We've been talking with...
Thomas from Tucson, Arizona.
Thomas from Tucson.
Yes.
Or Tucson Tom,
Tucson
as you might
Tom.
Call it.
Actually, that's my nickname. So.
Thank you, Tucson Tom.
Thank you. What's your name?
Talking with...
Wanda Conaway Knight.
And Wanda, what have you got for us? I know you're a San Lorenzo Valley survivor.
Oh, yeah, I'm a survivor.
Police haven't shot you yet in spite of your darker hue.
I don't think they ever will.
And what's happening that you want to comment on that we might not know about, if you could be heard over this loud music?
Well, what I'm out here for is for Prop 55. Prop 55 is an extension of Prop 30 that's going to expire January. And what that is, it taxes the most wealthiest people in California, the one who makes over $250,000. And the taxes won't change, but it will help child care, education, social services, and everything else. But if that fails, then it's going to take away from in-home support, taking care of the elderly and everything else. So,
gotcha.
any local reports. I mean, I think you're probably going to get a majority in this county voting for Prop 55. So, but what about other things that maybe people don't know so much about?
We're in negotiations for the contract for in-home support. Even though the Board of Supervisors just gave themselves a raise, and I'm living off of $11.90, no health care, and no vacation, no sick leave, no holidays. So we're trying to get health care back and trying to make this more of a professional job, because we take care of the most vulnerable people there is in the world.
And we've been talking with
Wanda Conaway Knight.
Thank you.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Wanda is an African-American activist from San Lorenzo Valley, which can be challenging. She's talked about racial discrimination up there in the past, and there wasn't much opportunity given the invasion of the drummers, actually a very sort of colorful ethnic drumming activity. I'm not sure exactly... they were folks in, I think they were mostly women, I'm not sure. I was listening, I was forced to listen. I was more distracted by the sound than by the visual impact. In any case, the phone number here if you want to call in, although I'm again hoping, I thought there was a call going to be coming in at 6:30 from Marysville. Perhaps 7 is when they're going to call in, and if they don't, I may try to give them a call. I also got a call from Cherie of... an activist with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, who said she'd like to be on the, on the air and talking, but she's not allowed to do that by the Association of Faith Communities, which is the sort of mini program run by 7 or 8 churches that give a total of 20 people a spot on the floor, provided they abide by, well, what she regards as rather restrictive regulations. They also have had the same problem. She hasn't been able to go to the Freedom Sleepers, although she wanted to sleep there at different nights, but they told her if she did, she would lose her place. I've talked to Mel Nunez of the Monitor, the Association of, the Association of Faith Communities here, in this program that involves shelter for 20 folks, or sometimes less, but I think their max is 20. And he sort of expressed frustration and said that it would, I don't know if he said it would cause chaos, but he felt that unless, he didn't seem open to the suggestion that this whole thing be arranged so that if you are going to take a night away, somebody else perhaps could come in and take your place, that wants to come in because you want to go somewhere else. It seems to me that shouldn't be too hard to manage, but apparently the bureaucratic drag on this program, and maybe personal decisions by Deborah, I believe, the woman who runs the program on the ground level, is dragging along and making some folks feel that they're being treated in a less than sterling way and less than a decent way in terms of their rights as adults and human beings who appreciate shelter but don't want to have to be treated like 6-year-olds in shelter. Probably should have Mel on the station. I've talked to him about it on the air. I think we had him interviewed a few weeks ago. Anyway, let's take a musical break, and I'll be back. Who knows? Hopefully with a report from the front up in Northern California, where the bulldozers apparently are a bulldozing.
I love this loft. I'll take it.
Welcome home, Agnes.
Just look at the people out in the street, not sitting in cars. They're moving their feet to different drummers and different beats. This place is so cool, I feel the heat. And this is the place I be. Look at that Chevy, must be older than me. At the top of that building, it says 1903.
There's an auto body shop where they even tow, and an Indian restaurant with pizza to go. They sell voodoo candles at the corner store. Everything I could want is outside my door. And this is the place I meet. See that guy there? He's wearing a dress. That woman's an artist. Her hair is a mess. See that family going to church? Look at that wino. Watch him lurch.
Voices in the church sing.
Away from the mall. I love this city. I love the feel. Cause it has the feel of some place real. And this is the place I belong.
That was the first number of the ancient Santa Cruz mime production, City for Sale, which I played before on the show, but it has been a couple years. And it's a, I think it's a wonderful series of songs. I love them. And I'm going to play some of them tonight. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org if you're on your computer. And you can call in. Call-in number is 427-3772. I've attempted to reach the folks in Marysville, and I've not so far been successful. So I think what I'm going to do is sort of give you a report that I received from them this morning when I got a phone call from them describing their struggle in the last couple of days. They mentioned that homeless folks' tents and property are being destroyed and seized. This is the two folks who themselves are homeless, and who one of whom calls herself the mayor of the homeless up in Marysville, which is a little town near Yuba. It's in Yuba County, and I'm still a little vague as to where exactly they are, but they're, I think, north central California. What they've been doing as the bulldozers have been coming in and their property is being dumped, and they're finding that the rangers or whoever it is, police, the authorities that are taking their property are refusing to let them save it or to store it. They are taking pictures. They're videoing. And they've also tagged the property. That is to say, the homeless folks have tagged their own property, as suggested by activist Michael Rhodes of Fresno, who was here in Santa Cruz a week ago at the invitation of the ACLU on a book tour where he was reading selections from his book. And that the selections he read were covered some of the period when he in Fresno fought the same fight. It was called Dispatches from the War Zone. And he and his daughter, actually, took a lot of photos of the sanitation crews and Parks and Rec and Caltrans and city authorities, however they were in Fresno, doing the same thing, and then took those to attorneys and got attorneys interested because it was such a clear evidence of a violation of basic rights that even people who would like to see homeless people gone can't really countenance this kind of thing happening this way. I think they'd suggest that you try to do it without at least making a public spectacle of yourself. And so now up in Marysville, apparently Ray Lynn and the other activists up there are doing something similar in order to get clear documentation that they hope can encourage attorneys to take cases that their own cases for damages against the city and for an injunction to stop this and stop future raids. They're also going to be using the kind of playing the conservation card. Apparently trees are being torn out, elderberry trees where there's a rare beetle that's almost extinct. This demolition, according to the notes I've taken from interview this morning, started the day before yesterday, but it's going on for 2 days. It goes from 8 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. They have kind of moved people to a central spot, and then they, it's their belief, these two activists, Ray Lynn and her partner, that they're going to go after the place where they've moved everybody to and move them out of there, further and further away from the town. The shelters are full, they say. She and her companion Brian apparently proposed shelter design. I'm not sure it was a run by the homeless design or something else, but they tried to work with the authorities to help create solutions. The authorities fundamentally took a different road. The temperatures dropped down to 50 degrees at night, and there was frost on people's blankets last night, according to one man named Lewis. The only reason he stayed warm was because of his dog. Could have been at least a one-dog night, if not a three-dog night. They crushed what they didn't tow. They grabbed a vehicle with a claw thing. This is the home for a person is their vehicle, and dragged it, and some of these homes are not functional as cars, and smashed and made the homes uninhabitable. There were news media there, and there was a writer dude following them around, according to their description. And again, they tagged all their property, and so did the other campers, so that it was clear that their property was not trash and was not abandoned. And I think the Freedom Sleepers tried to do something similar originally, and the police have not tried the mass demolition of property at City Hall anyway. That has happened at other places in the Santa Cruz area, at least that's what I've been told in interviews I've had over the last couple of years. But if it's really visible at City Hall, and that's one of the advantages, I've been a little discouraged at the Freedom Sleeper choice of location, but one of the advantages of that location is, in a sense, it's visible, not because a lot of people walk by, but because it is the seat of government, and it is also, if you have a video camera and you're there, of course, I guess that's true anywhere you go. If you have a video camera, you can keep a record of what goes on. So, also, this last weekend, there was a forum on Saturday night that activist Dennis Perrone was going to go to. He's a San Francisco freedom fighter, in the best senses of the word, that has struggled significantly and successfully to expand the rights and meet the needs of folks who want to use medical marijuana. And he actually was behind the creation of Proposition 215, he and others, but he was certainly one of the chief folks in 1996 when it was passed and became the most liberal law created by the voters, not by any legislative body, but by all of us. And it essentially allowed the marijuana to be grown and used for almost any medical condition at all, provided a doctor certified that you thought it was good for that. It's a very loose kind of requirement for it to be legal. And, of course, that's been fought tooth and nail by the reactionary drug warriors who have both a religious ideology to defend and also a financial incentive in terms of the funding for the police departments, the drug testing agencies, the prisons, the parole system, everything that makes huge amounts of fortunes off of this devastating war against people that's called a drug war, but it's actually a war on folks. The issue that's coming up is Proposition 64, a proposition that has made the ballot and is likely to pass, which seemed to be presented as, well, it makes it legal to have six joints. It makes it legal to have marijuana at home. It may eliminate a few penalties. And I had heard other things from other voices that this actually would seriously undercut the medical marijuana rights that have been established by the citizens on Proposition 215. The significance of a proposition done by initiative by the people is that the legislature can't change it by a vote from Sacramento. They have to put out an initiative that is passed by the voters that changes it. And they have not been able to do this, or they've chosen not to do this, for the last 20 years, except now. And it isn't being done by the legislature. It's being done by corporate folks who want to move in, and also by some well-intended people as well, I'm sure, who want to see at least a step toward legalization of marijuana. Anyway, this forum, which I recorded, and which I think may be online soon, may already be online. My version of it, I'm not sure how good it is. We're going to play a little of it tonight in an interview with the one speaker who came. Perrone got ill, and he couldn't make it, Dennis Perrone. And there was a talk about rescheduling that. And I hope they do. There was an interesting handout given the AU-AMA Exposed. That's the, it's an abbreviation for the Marijuana Act, Proposition 64. And apparently the proposition, I'm told, is over 60 pages long, and I still haven't read it. I just never get around to doing that. But this is a series of criticisms by this activist who came up from Southern California to be a part of the forum, who actually was the forum. His name is Buddy Dose. And he has a number of concerns. The main sort of the impact, as shown by the findings and declarations in the initiative, Proposition 64, is that somehow the implication is that marijuana, it's called the Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act, or more briefly, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, AUMA, AMA. It's going to legalize marijuana for those over 21 years old, which is fine, but it's going to, here's the problem, protect children, establish laws to regulate marijuana cultivation, distribution, sale, and use, and protect Californians and the environment from potential dangers, and then establishes the Bureau of Marijuana Control within the Department of Consumer Affairs to regulate and license the marijuana industry. I am not an expert on how other crops or even recreational beverages like beer and wines are regulated. But that is something that has been suggested by those who have been proposing a more liberal initiative that hasn't been able to make the ballot because it doesn't have the corporate funding that this one did. But this one sort of starts off with the notion of sort of a reefer madness kind of focus. There's a danger with marijuana. It needs special treatment. You see this really biased and paranoid view toward marijuana in the local Santa Cruz City Council. They, for years, would not allow marijuana clubs to open, even after it became legal under Proposition 215 in 1996. And the marijuana clubs that were open were illegal clubs. Now, they tolerated them. They didn't go after them. But they wouldn't license them. They wouldn't allow them. And now, there are only two licensed clubs allowed in the Santa Cruz City. There are more in the county, but these are likely to face problems as the cultivators are facing problems. And I haven't had the energy or the time, I haven't had the time to follow up on what we discussed about in the past few months regarding the supervisor's attempt to restrict marijuana cultivation. because what's immediately coming up in 3 weeks is Proposition 64, which I'm beginning to be convinced is a real disaster for people who want to see marijuana treated in a reasonable way. And even for those who have a very special interest in making marijuana available to low-income people, both for recreational and medicinal purposes. I think what I'll begin to do, though, I think I began talking about this in the last couple of shows. I did have Mike Jolson on, and we talked about this at the last Huff meeting, the issue of Proposition 64. We had one activist who himself had helped the Hemp Expo get together about 15 or 20 years ago. That was Bob LaMonica. And he's a supporter of Proposition 64, or was, when he came into the meeting. And he was sort of suggesting it was just sort of far-out folks who opposed it, and it was a good step in the right direction. Sort of all the litany of positive comments that I have heard from others, but that may not go deep enough to look at it. As I said, one of the main concerns is that Proposition 215, the current medical marijuana law, will be made very vulnerable if this thing passes. That is to say, the legislature is specifically empowered to make changes in the ordinance. I believe it's not to make changes in the 215 itself, but since sections of 215 are referenced in this new law, that is proposition that's being proposed as an initiative by the voters, 64, if the legislature can change that, then that in turn will change Proposition 215. There are a number of kind of really basic concerns that are raised, and I think I will allow Buddy Dose to talk a bit about this, because I think he describes it, goes at it better than I, and he's organized this interesting handout. I think it's a 6-page handout I was looking at. I may draw from it, and I may try to post both his speech, his presentation to us last Saturday, and also what he's written. But why don't we begin, since this is radio, with what he had to say, or some of what he had to say. And, let's do that.
Outside the Loudon Nelson Center, Saturday afternoon, a rainy Saturday afternoon, but it's not raining at the moment. You okay? And we're and I'm talking with, what is your name, sir?
I'm Buddy Doozy.
And, Buddy, you're here, even though you're not feeling terribly well, because someone else is feeling even worse. Dennis Perrone was going to try to make it, but he got the flu.
Yeah.
So you're here in...
to be sort of
pinch hitting, so to speak, and you are taking a brief smoking break while we wait for the masses to assemble at the event, which is essentially an analysis of the Proposition 64 measure coming up and actually on the ballot and being voted on now by voters across the state, which will sort of legalize small amounts of marijuana, but at least in the minds of those opposing it, takes away more than it gives and has not a lot of problems, more or less.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to point out what I think is the biggest problem, and that is the secret of ALMA is that it... ALMA is the Adult Use of Marijuana Act.
And that's Proposition 64.
Proposition 64. And I was pointing out this one part that they added. This section, 11362.2 of the Health and Safety Code, was written to address personal cultivation. The cities and counties get to decide what type of personal cultivation can occur in their jurisdictions.
It's part of the Proposition 64.
Yeah. And what bothers me is this subparagraph 4, where it says that paragraph 3 of this subdivision, which refers to the cities and counties and how they're able to dictate how it's going to be done. Paragraph 3 of the subdivision shall become inoperable upon a determination by the California Attorney General that non-medical use of marijuana is lawful in the state of California under federal law. that what that's saying is if the feds decide to legalize weed on the federal level, and an act taken by a city, county, or city and county under paragraph 3 shall be deemed repealed upon the date of such a determination by the California attorney. So the personal grow, the whole personal grow scheme goes away when the federal government takes over. So personal grows will no longer be legal in California because the federal government will now dictate how cannabis is going to be made legal.
Read the wording of it again for me.
This subdivision shall become inoperable.
And the subdivision is?
Paragraph 3, which says that it addresses cities and counties may prohibit persons from engaging in acts and conduct under paragraph 3 of subdivision, et cetera, upon the grounds of a private residence.
Now, is that specifically what you're concerned about, that particular paragraph, or is there more?
What I'm concerned about is that...
Is that the phrase? Is that the sentence you're concerned about?
What I'm concerned about is that the federal law, when the feds decide to legalize cannabis on a federal level, then the state laws become inoperable.
Well, I think...
Yeah,
that also implies that the city and county restrictions on marijuana will become inoperable as well.
Yeah, it will all be turned over to the federal government. They will decide cannabis policy, and most likely they're going to decide to regulate it like they regulate alcohol,
rather than beer and wine, which we had an earlier speaker.
More liberal, yeah. The alcohol is just like you can't have a still in your backyard. Most likely they will not allow you to have cannabis in your backyard either. I can't say that for sure. I don't know what the federal government's going to do when they do that. But I do know that that in ALMA, contained in ALMA, are these provisions that allow the federal government to wipe out grows, and not only wipe out grows, but wipe out all local and state laws pertaining to
state laws as well as city and county.
Yeah, here's
the sentence again.
The other half of that of my point. Upon a determination by the California Attorney General that the federal schedule of controlled substances has been amended to reclassify or declassify marijuana, the legislature may amend or repeal provisions of the Health and Safety Code as necessary to conform state law to such changes in federal law.
So it gives the state legislature the power to change Proposition 64, even though it's an initiative.
It gives the state the power to turn over cannabis control to the federal government. Upon a finding that the federal government has decided to declassify or reclassify marijuana, the state, because marijuana growing is it's a state issue. It's not a federal issue. They have to have permission from California to regulate it at the federal level.
And I'm going to interrupt this rather arcane analysis of part of the ALMA Act, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, because on the line with us is none other than that Marysville homeless, Haradan.
Hold on, Robert.
Yes. Who's actually having a little trouble hearing us. She hasn't heard the show up to now, but she...
Hold on, Robert. Hold on.
Hopefully will give us a report shortly. We're holding on. We're good.
Okay, there we go. All right, we can hear you now.
Okay, so let me tell you, we are talking, of course, with Raylan Butcher. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I've already described in some detail at least some of the things you told me this morning about, the raids that happened, the elderberry tree destruction and the possible environmental challenge, the fact that people are being herded together into one place where there are about 300 of them, and then they may in 3 weeks go after those folks, that winter is coming, that there was frost on the blankets last night, that vehicles are essentially being, crushed or at least damaged by their towing. So, and that it's being covered by some of the news media and by this writer dude, friend of yours, Kirk Barron. So I want to let you know that that much has already been mentioned. Is there more about what's going on? Do you want to talk about what's been happening up there in addition to all that?
Well, a lot of havoc. I mean, a lot of chaos going on right now because there's just people scrambling around trying to find a place to just get out of the cold right now. Like myself, I'm just out here in the very front of the old trailer park for the last two nights now. And it's like, we really don't have a place right now. There's like about six of us up here hurled together right now. And there's about 35 of them they're just, I don't even know.
They're like zombies almost, that is shocked that they're really in the distress. You can really honestly see, and for the first time in my life to see something like that, I don't know, it's different. I haven't been able to see that, but I can identify with what's going on because it's really post-traumatic to them. They don't even really realize, I don't think, because me and myself, when I videotaped them crushing my house, and it just is all I could do to stand that after building something for 8 or 9 years, you know, by the people that did it. So I'd like to add a little bit on that, you know.
I'm going to be putting it out on YouTube, and anybody that wants to watch the destruction of what's going on up here right now, it'll be on my name, Raylan Butcher, on YouTube. And I'm going to post it probably tonight, so it'll be on here about an hour or so. I'll have it up and running. I've got a lot of clips on it. And
everyone should be seen.
Yeah, and I think every one of them should be seen so people really know what's going on.
So Raylan, how do you spell your full name?
R-A-E-L-Y-N-N, Butcher, B-U-T-C-H-E-R.
That sounds easy enough. Raylan Butcher. And this will be on YouTube. This will be on YouTube, you say, so people can check out what's happening.
I'll have about 9 clips on there, and they're kind of, some of them are short.
And some of them are graphic.
Some of them are just like,
wow.
It's been really bad up here, and my people, as I call the homeless, so they call me their mayor. It's been like really crazy right now, and we're just
nobody knows what to.
Yeah.
Now the other person with you is, of course, you must sign in, sir. Give your name for us.
Brian Brown.
Of course. And Brian, I should say, either of you can answer this. Has anything happened today, additionally, that's changed things since you gave us the report this morning about, you know, the deportation or the relocation or the demolition of the shelter of about what 30 to 50 people so far?
But there's nowhere for them to go. They're full up.
For the new tiny houses that they put up here, they're full. They're full. So there's nobody has nowhere to go right now. None, zero.
And where were they previously? In other words, what kind of shelter did they have before this happened?
They really didn't have one. And now they just gave us a sleep zone, which is in the middle of a mud puddle. And there's nothing there. And it's just like in an open field, no shade, no nothing. And they expect us to sleep there. And we can only sleep there. We can't stay there, but we can sleep there. That's it.
You move to B zone.
Yeah. And they got an A and a B zone. You can move from A zone for like a couple of days, 3 days out of the week, and then you go to B zone. And then,
designated for us.
What do we do during the day? where are we supposed to go to the day? Because we're getting ran out of the parks. We've already been ran out of the river. And, it's crazy. It's crazy up here right now. I mean, I'm in so much, like, emotional shock right now. I'm just like, oh, my God. I've been here 13 years, and nothing like this has ever happened up here.
One day notice.
Yeah, a one day notice we got. One day. It's crazy. My people are just like, oh, my God, my phone is so busy all day. I'm just, I have no time for myself right now. I haven't. I had to put my dogs in a shelter, and thank God, that the kennel where I put my dog, they said, hey, look, for the great things that you've been doing for the community and for your people, we're going to give you a month. You got a month of no charge. And this was out of the kindness of their heart for the things that I've been doing up here and trying to,
for my people, period.
For 7 years, they've been on the consortium. They've been trying to do things for homeless people, but they don't have a dime.
Yeah. And, like, where does all that money go? Where does that money go?
Nothing.
Yeah, where they spend all that money that they, and these people up here, the city council, they knew that 2 years ago that this was going to happen. And they should have been preparing a little bit more for the people instead of just trying to kick them out. They want to kick them out of the county. Even if they don't take any services from the little tiny houses, which they can't because there's no place for them right now.
Well, let me ask you, Raylan, is there generally this discriminatory attitude on homeless folks not being allowed in the parks during the day as well, just as a matter of course?
Yeah.
So what do they tell you if you are in the park? I mean, you know, what kind of excuse do they use?
They tell us that that's a no sleeping zone,
and you're not allowed to lay down or sit in the city.
Yeah.
Well, can you sit in the park?
We can sit in it, but if we look like we're asleep, they harass us.
I see.
They're on us.
But sitting and sleeping is two different things. So if you look like you're sleeping or sitting, because it is an ordinance now they made on, you can't be sitting or laying on the sidewalk.
Unless it's a medical emergency.
What about in the parks? Are you allowed to sit in the parks? Can you sit in the parks? You say not on the sidewalks, but...
Yeah, but if you look homeless, they're going to kick us out. They're going to run us out of the park. If they even think we are.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Say that again.
I've noticed in the last 2 days, people are just walking in the night. The last two nights.
Like zombies.
They have just been walking around like zombies with nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go.
Yeah. It's so sad. It's sad.
It really is sad. Now, yesterday, front page of the Appeal Democrat was pretty sad. It was pretty sad. The code enforcement lady, matter of fact, I have some really good footage.
Yes.
I am really happy to share that tonight with everybody.
Yeah.
And
hey, let me ask you, Raylan, about the documentation that you two have been able to put together. You and Brian, have you been able to get photos of, have you been able to get photos, but B, have you been able to, do you think deter the police or whoever's taken your stuff in any way because they know that your stuff is tagged and they know that your stuff is, it's being photographed as they take it away?
I definitely got a good response from the guy that was tearing it up. He told us, just my job, go and talk to them down there. So Brian and I started walking down the hill, and the lady from code enforcement
said,
I told her, I said, look, I didn't give anybody no permission to tear up my stuff and for damage it, destroy it, because it has value to me. And she goes, I know that, and I mean, she put it right.
I know that I did not, and that you made it clear to us that we do not have permission to tear up your property.
And I got that on footage, and we're putting that out.
So again, my question is not that. My question is, did she stop when you told her that?
No, they didn't.
So and is that true with other people's property too? So it's not stopping them to know that one, the property is specifically stated, don't destroy this. It's my property. I don't know if you have that on the property. And then secondly, we're taking pictures of it. That hasn't had any impact on the cleanup then?
The workers, they dropped the fence. When I went back and started videotaping in one of the clips, they did drop the fence, and then they just started standing there. When I was telling them, I told you guys, they don't give you permission, and my signs are right there on the fences. I got like 8 or 9 of them. I got my place surrounded with them. And they did kind of stop. Now to talk about that, they did kind of stop a little bit.
That was just the workers, but then
then
the guy with the big old claw, he was still
excavator.
Going. Yeah,
excavator.
He was still going.
Yeah, tearing up endangered species trees is really a sad thing too. They're a protected tree, and they just treat.
So did they in fact then take your property and destroy it, or are they taking it somewhere to store it? What's their claim?
No, they just destroyed it. They put it in the back of a dump truck and took it
to the
out.
Dump.
Yep.
And I know that this happened with I'm told it happened in Fresno. The one woman stood in front of a dump truck and wouldn't let it move. In fact, she protected a person inside a tent that they were going to smash the tent, ignoring the fact that there was a person inside, or perhaps not knowing there was a person inside. Has there been any kind of resistance to this physically by anybody?
Well, I'm sure tomorrow, Annette, you're going to your camp tomorrow, aren't you?
No, telling about
those two. My friend Annette here, she's going to be down at her camp, and she's going to tell them the same thing, and she's the type that will not move.
Okay, let me answer that question. There was two dogs that was in a motorhome, and they had lied and told me on the video that they had, that the owner gave permission to leave the dogs there while they killed it up front. They couldn't get the dogs out, so they put the trailer right next to one another, and so they had to break the windows to get out, but they tore up. It was a perfectly great trailer. But her dogs, yeah, they didn't check, and I asked the guy, the owner, the guy that ran the business, you know, there could be a person in there. There could be something. He says, no. He says, we got permission. He just evaded that whole
And he
just didn't even care about human life.
Has there been any resistance to this physically, or people just...
Fire burn? Fire.
Oh, there is a fire.
There's a fire going on. Look. Fire! We got a big fire going on right now. Oh my God, who's camp? Oh my God, we have a big, big fire going on right now. Oh my God. Oh my God. And we've got shovels, and we've got any tools. We don't have any tools at all. Everything that we have is gone.
We don't have anything.
Oh my God.
Perfect timing, huh?
Oh my God. I don't know.
Well, Ray Lynn, if you want, maybe you want to go deal with that. You're welcome to keep...
That's your camp, girlfriend. That's where your camp is. Oh, my God. We have a big fire going on right now.
So how far away are you from the fire, Ray Lynn?
How far are we from that, Brian? How far are we from that fire right there?
About 200 yards, maybe.
Somebody call. Call the fire department right now. Oh, God. Brian, get the other phone. Get the other phone and call. It's right there at the end of that trailer.
If you want to call the fire department, I can.
Oh, my God, Robert.
I can hang up if you'd like. You want to call me back, or?
Yeah, I'm going to have to call you back, brother, because it looks like we got two fires going. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, you get to those fires and, you know, do what you can and get back to me if you'd like, and we will hear more from you later. And this sounds like an emergency.
Oh, no, it's closer than that, Brian. It's right there. Robert, I got to go because the fire's like not even from here to half a block from us.
Go, Roland.
Okay. I'm going to call you back as soon as I know what's going on here, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, Robert. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that was Raylan Butcher and Brian Brown. I think it's Brian Brown up in Marysville, dealing with forced demolition and relocation by the city authorities up there in Marysville, and also apparently now a fire. So wow. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the phone number here, if you want to call in, is 427-3772. Let's hear a little of City for Sale.
I went down to Chance Bodega, a funky corner store. I walked in and what I saw, it knocked me to the floor. Lots of jars full of cigars at $30 each. A neon sign, imported wine, and microcreamery cheese. And there's no more single cigarettes, and no more bargain beer. The writing's on the wall, my friends, the end is drawing near. SUVs are everywhere, old trucks cannot be found. This is not the place where I grew up, I don't know my own hometown. Just look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. We got some losses, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a nice designer. Hell, the city that I knew is gone, this city is for sale. Apartments, farms, and condos, they burn down cheap hotels. The Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. The Yuppies take the south side, and the city
got a new name, Peak of the Range. It's a high concept design. It's full of rocks, it's a mountaintop, and clouds go rolling by. Got Alpine cuisine, I saw limousines, and it's full of guys. I just look and you can see it. You can watch the city die. It's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a mad designer hail. The city that I knew is gone, the city is for sale. Apartments on the condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell.
And, of course, City for Sale, that was the title song of the 1998 musical, The Mime Troupe. A lot of wonderful Mime Troupe productions. I didn't catch the one this year, though I had heard from some old-timers that Mime Troupe is getting silted down and conservative and more timid in its old age, or its whatever. But I love their music. It's too bad they don't put out albums regularly for the stuff they do, but they don't. There's only a handful of their albums you can get. And so I regularly bootleg. I go in there. If I'm watching them, I'll just record it. I did that with, I guess, year before this one, but didn't get to this one this year. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772. I was running through the Adult Use of Marijuana Act critics, the critics of Proposition 64. Buddy Dozy, as I hear his name is pronounced, at least properly, that's how he pronounces it. I'm going to actually begin by playing some of the hour-long speech or analysis he did. He really is just sort of running through his written material, but I think if it's audible, he does so pretty well. And there's some enlightening comments from the audience as well. It was a very small audience, only about, I don't know, 10 of us in the room. Craig Canada, a longtime medical marijuana activist locally who has his own website, was there. I think Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels happened in for a short time. Number of folks from out of town with long beards and fiery eyes, and that was me with my audio recorder, and then there was Mike Jolson, who you've heard on the air here before. He's a longtime marijuana advocate. In fact, has apparently quite a reputation, so much so that Bob LaMonica, who didn't believe, who was a pro 64 person before he came to the Huff meeting yesterday after hearing that Jolson was against it, as well as Scott Immler, another activist from whom you old timers may remember, helped to set up one of the first medical marijuana clubs when they were illegal, and at the corner actually of Cedar and Maple Streets. Wow, those were the days. Anyway, I'm going to play a little of Buddy Dozy's discussion, and you can draw your own conclusions.
Buddy Dozy is about to give a presentation.
Buddy Dozy, folks.
And I'm going to hit you real quick. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming out to our teaching.
This is Mike Jolson.
Happy harvest, or not harvest moon, but happy full moon. I'm wondering, Elijah, how, if this is should be up more. Or...
We can probably hold it in our hands.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you, everyone, for coming out. And this is October 15th, Saturday night, the full moon. This is a teaching to save Prop 215 and to vote no on Prop 64. we want to replicate this event throughout the state in the last few weeks of the, before the election. I'm here to quickly announce our main speaker, and that is a good friend of mine and a good friend of Jack Harris, Buddy Doozy. Buddy Doozy is the treasurer of our organization that Jack Harris set up, and we are the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, and this is our production tonight. We're doing a teach-in against Prop 64. So Buddy Doozy is an old-time activist, Grateful Dead family, who was good friends of Captain Ed Adair, who's considered one of the founding fathers of the cannabis hemp modern reform movement, of which Jack Harris later took up the slack. So Buddy predates even Jack with his activism, and I always heard about Buddy through Jack Harris and finally had the pleasure of meeting him. Once again, Buddy's the treasurer of our organization. We're the California Hemp Initiative 2016. We have a political action committee, and we fought long and hard to get this on the ballot. We tried to get this on the ballot in 2016 and failed, but we've been trying since 1990 to get this initiative on the ballot. Buddy's here to educate us, and I thank you, Buddy. Thank you, Robert Norris. Thank you, everyone that came out. Thank you, Sasha, for helping promote this event, and thank you, Elijah, for videoing. And without further ado, I welcome you, Buddy, and to our event.
Okay, what I'm going to do here is I've taken the first part of ALMA, the findings and declarations, where they're going to describe what they're doing, as well as the purpose and intent, where they describe what they're doing in ALMA. And I analyzed, sentence by sentence, I analyzed, and I will give you my opinion on what it is saying. I have, if anybody doesn't have a copy, I have a copy you can follow along. Basically, these are the remarks that I'm going to be presenting. And I have them in colors, because I'm just going to address certain parts of each paragraph. I won't be addressing the entire thing, just the ones that I find relevant. So this is an analysis of the findings and declarations and the purpose and intent of ALMA. Currently in California, non-medical marijuana use is unregulated, untaxed, and occurs without any consumer or environmental protections. My analysis of that sentence. I believe this opening sentence is thematic of the whole initiative. The narrative that they wish to portray is that cannabis is a danger to the people and the environment, that it is dominated by ruthless criminals and cartels, and must be singled out for extensive regulation by nearly a dozen different enforcement agencies. The truth is that there are already laws on the books that protect our environment. It's already illegal to steal and divert water and to use federal lands without authorization. The second sentence goes like this. The Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act will legalize marijuana for those over 21 years old, protect children, and establish laws to regulate marijuana cultivation, distribution, sale, and use, and will protect Californians and the environment from potential dangers. Analyzing this sentence, it's possible that legalization can be framed in a manner that's worse than criminalization. And that's the case with ALMA. Most of the criminal laws governing cannabis will remain on the books. It will still be illegal to sell or possess cannabis in most cases. You can still go to jail or prison for possessing larger quantities or for sharing cannabis with someone under the age of 18. The same arbitrary DUI enforcement will still exist, where the judgment of the police officer, coupled with a positive test for metabolized cannabis, is usually enough to get a DUI conviction. Moving on to sentence number 3, ALMA establishes the Bureau of Marijuana Control within the Department of Consumer Affairs to regulate and license the marijuana industry. Actually, it doesn't create a new Bureau of Marijuana Control. It just takes over MRSA. MRSA is the medical marijuana... MRSA is the law that was just passed in 2015 and signed by Governor Brown. And it created the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Control. What ALMA does is it usurps that bureau, it drops the word medical, and it expands it to cover recreational pot. All of the onerous regulations contained in the MRSA bill will remain intact. The next point is point B in the findings and declarations. And I'll move on to the second sentence, where it says, abuse of the medical marijuana system in California has long been widespread, but recent bipartisan legislation signed by Governor Jerry Brown is establishing a comprehensive regulatory scheme for medical marijuana. My analysis is this. The notion that there's widespread abuse in the current medical cannabis industry is driven by the opposition's claim that doctors are writing notes to just about anybody who wants one. They point out that the COA, Compassionate Use Act, that's Proposition 215, was written to allow seriously ill patients legal access to cannabis, and so only seriously ill patients should be eligible to enjoy the right to use legal cannabis. But 20 years of accumulated experience in medical cannabis use has demonstrated that the benefits of cannabis extend far beyond benefits afforded only to seriously ill patients. Patients suffering from stress, insomnia, PTSD, and other ailments, which may not be considered serious to some, are able to use legal cannabis for relief. The CUI, the Compassionate Use Act language, states that cannabis can be used legally by patients suffering from not only serious ailments listed in the CUA, but I quote, I'm quoting 215 now, any other illness for which marijuana provides relief. So the CUA actually allows cannabis, doctors to recommend cannabis for just about anything that marijuana will provide relief. And so if that's being too liberal, I don't see how that's being too liberal, since we all know from 20 years of experience that cannabis relieves all kinds of ailments. So given this language, a doctor can, in good conscience, recommend cannabis to just about anyone who wants to use cannabis instead of or in addition to other medications. Claiming that this is widespread abuse is to reinforce the recurring theme of ALMA, that pot is so dangerous that we can only legalize it if it is tightly regulated. 80 years ago, anti-cannabis hemp special interest gave us reefer madness. The notion that the cannabis implant was so dangerous that the entire plant should be made illegal. What ALMA is doing is giving us reefer madness 2.0. The acknowledgement that more and more people are coming to the realization that they lied about reefer madness and that marijuana isn't as bad as they said. But it's still so bad that it has to be legalized under what will turn out to be the most regulated scheme of any existing legal substance. Cannabis under ALMA will be regulated more heavy than any heavy narcotic or just about anything except for maybe nuclear fuel. The next sentence, sentence number three. The Control, Regulate, and Tax Adult Use of Marijuana Act, hereafter called the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, will consolidate and streamline regulation and taxation for both non-medical and medical marijuana. Consolidate with MRSA. My analysis is sentence number three. The dictionary definition of consolidate is to join together into one whole. So what ALMA is admitting right here in the findings and declarations, that they are joining together with MRSA to consolidate into one whole. ALMA does just that with MRSA. ALMA is MRSA. Streamlining the two bills means phasing out the medical differentiations of marijuana legalization. The next paragraph, paragraph C, I'll go to the second and third sentences. The Adult Use of Marijuana Act will tax both the growth and sale of marijuana to generate hundreds of millions of dollars annually. The revenues will cover the costs of administering the new law and will provide funds to invest in public health programs that educate youth to prevent and treat serious substance abuse, train local law enforcement to enforce the new law with a focus on DUI enforcement, invest in communities to reduce the illicit market and create job opportunities, and provide for environmental cleanup and restoration of public lands damaged by illegal marijuana cultivation.
My analysis is that ALMA creates a multitude of hefty new taxes and fees to support huge new bureaucracies and enforcement agencies with the power to ban legal, experienced, long-time Prop 215 growers, maybe even for life, from participating in the cannabis trade. Paragraph D of the funding declarations, first sentence, currently children under the age of 18 can just as easily purchase marijuana on the black market as adults can. By legalizing marijuana, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act will incapacitate the black market and move marijuana purchases into the legal structure with strict safeguards against children accessing it. My analysis is that ALMA does nothing to fix this issue. We only have to examine the track record of the authors of ALMA to see that in other states where they have legalized cannabis, the black market still thrives. With the onerous regulations, the difficulties of compliance, the stiff fines, coupled with the ability of over a dozen different agencies to revoke licenses and institute bans, many of the producers and providers of cannabis will be forced to risk jail time to continue to provide the quality product that their customers have come to enjoy and rely on. If they lose their license, they're not going to go away. They're just going to grow underground in the black market. Paragraph E of ALMA, findings and declarations, says, I'm going to sentence number three. The Adult Use of Marijuana Act sets up a comprehensive system governing marijuana businesses at the state level and safeguards local control, allowing local governments to regulate marijuana-related activities, to subject marijuana businesses to zoning and permitting requirements, and to ban marijuana businesses by a vote of the people within a locality. My analysis, under ALMA, multiple agencies at the state and county and city level will have vast powers to regulate the cannabis trade, including outright bans. We already have a pretty good picture of how this will play out at the local level. Under the MRSA guidelines, cities have already instituted policies governing medical cannabis, which include extremes such as a ban on all commerce, a ban on outdoor grows, and a requirement that indoor grows by qualified patients be subject to inspection by various city enforcement agencies. There's no reason to believe that these policies won't be extended to recreational cannabis. The millions of dollars spent by activists fighting local bans will have to be spent again defeating local propositions calling for outright bans. Paragraph F, first sentence, currently illegal marijuana growers steal or divert millions of gallons of water without any accountability. The Adult Use of Marijuana Act will create strict environmental regulations to ensure that marijuana is grown efficiently and legally, to regulate the use of pesticides, to prevent wasting water, and to minimize water usage. My analysis of this sentence, there's already existing agricultural regulations to protect the environment. There already are laws pertaining to diverting and stealing water. Moving on to sentence number four, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act will crack down on the illegal use of water and punish bad actors while providing funds to restore land that have been damaged by illegal marijuana grows. My analysis is that singling out cannabis with special regulations and requirements provide another path to eliminate small growers, so that in 5 years, when the large corporate growers are allowed to enter the market, they won't have to compete with a superior product provided by small craft producers. Instead of having 1,000 new strains to enjoy every year, we could very well have just a few dozen branded varieties grown in huge quantities and genetically modified to maintain brand consistency. Paragraph G, sentence two. By legalizing marijuana, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act will alleviate pressure on the courts, but continue to allow prosecutors to charge the most serious marijuana-related offenses as felonies, while reducing the penalties for minor marijuana-related offenses as set forth in this act. My analysis is that this is just not true. Most of the current laws and penalties remain intact. Possession of under an ounce is still an infraction punishable by a $100 fine. Possession of legally acquired cannabis in an open package will also be illegal and punished by the $100 fine. Possession of more than an ounce, whether legally acquired or not, is currently and will remain punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Our jails are full of people doing time for pot, and this doesn't remedy anything. ALMA provides for sentences of up to 7 years in prison
for making your own concentrates, or for sharing cannabis with somebody under the age of 18. Paragraph H of the Finding and Declarations. By bringing marijuana into a regulated and legitimate market, the Adult Use of Marijuana Act creates a transparent and accountable system. This will help police crack down on the underground black market that currently benefits violent drug cartels and transnational gangs, which are making billions from marijuana trafficking and jeopardizing public safety. My analysis. ALMA provides funding and instruction to law enforcement to put focus on illegal cannabis-related activity, including false DUI, possession, transporting open containers, smoking in public, and other victimless crimes that cannabis reform should really is supposed to eliminate. The next paragraph, paragraph I of the Findings and Declarations. The Adult Use of Marijuana Act creates a comprehensive regulatory structure in which every marijuana business is overseen by a specialized agency with relevant expertise. The Bureau of Marijuana Control, housed in the Department of Consumer Affairs, will oversee the whole system and ensure a smooth transition to the legal market, with licenses issued beginning in 2018. The Department of Consumer Affairs will also license and oversee marijuana retailers, distributors, and microbusinesses. The Department of Food and Agriculture will license and oversee marijuana cultivation, ensuring that it is environmentally safe. The State Department of Public Health will license and oversee manufacturing and testing, ensuring consumers receive a safe product. The State Board of Equalization will collect the special marijuana taxes, and the controller will allocate the revenue to administer the new law and provide the funds to critical investments. My analysis, why do we need to create a giant new bureaucracy to regulate a safe, beneficial, and non-toxic herb that throughout history has proven to be a benefit to both adults and children alike? The answer is that we don't. Early versions of the U.S. Pharmacopeia, printed in the early 1900s, before cannabis was targeted for suppression by pharmaceutical and other special interests, listed cannabis as a prime indicator of relief for over 300 ailments, including many child-specific ailments, such as colic for babies. There is no reason that adult cannabis use can't be regulated in the same manner as beer and wine. It would be relatively easy to integrate cannabis into existing regulations applicable to beer and wine, from the plant to the consumer. That bureaucracy already exists. The reasoning behind ALMA doing it this way is to promote that same recurring theme, pot is dangerous, and needs tight regulation and massive funding needs to be provided to the multitude of enforcing agencies to expand the police state in order to protect us from this dangerous drug. Reefer Madness 2.0.
And it sounds like this, we're listening to Buddy Dozy. Do I have it right? Is this Doozy or Dozy? It's a doozy, which one way or the other. Who speaks audibly and well, and the recording actually works. So I'm going to try to put this whole recording together and post it on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. And also put this out on the Huff email list. If you want to become a member of Huff or just want to get our emails, just to get in touch with me by sending me an email to rnorse3@hotmail.com. I think this deserves a sort of a unified treatment so you can hear it all at once instead of being chopped up into various shows. And I'm also hoping to also put up the printed material that Buddy gave out at the time. I want to announce that Uncle Dennis, unfortunately, is ill isn't quite the word. He's undergoing medical examination up in Palo Alto, I understand, for unknown conditions. He's being a little chary about what his problems are, but they seem significantly serious. So he's had to, I believe his show will be done tonight. Either it'll be a repeat show from an earlier show, which... we've got a lot of those old ones, or actually we don't have a lot of them. We have a few that we keep replaying. But R-Duck, another free radio broadcaster, may be in to take over his show for tonight. I'm not sure quite what his plan specifically, but that is coming up. I think I have a few more items here that I want to run by you before I fade into the distance. Well, I was able to get the California Cannabis Advocates Alliance that's a group that's been concerned, very much focused on the MRSA regulations and finding ways to liberalize them or to find some way to get the county to not engage in massive cultivation bans or enforcement enablement. And they've been holding meetings at different points. They still hold weekly meetings. You can find their meetings. You look for CAA, Cannabis Advocates Alliance. Pat Malo, who has been on the show in the past, is an advocate and a worker for them and a friendly enough guy. However, he's kind of stroked my annoyance or anger or disapproval or skepticism, I'm not sure what you'd call it, because he hasn't taken any action to try to get the CAA to oppose Proposition 64. Maybe he feels it's futile. I think he has some sort of mixed feelings about 64. And I have not yet had an advocate for 64 on this show. And I will... I keep saying I'm going to try to do that, but apparently I'm not doing it yet. I'm making another note to do it, but... I really love to see a clear debate on some of these issues on 64. We did have a discussion about it at the Huff meeting, and almost everybody there was opposed to it, except, as I mentioned, one of our members a visitor. I'm not sure if Bob would call himself a member or not, but he said he'd think about it again and look it over because he had a lot of respect for some of the opponents. I call them opponents on the left or opponents on the medical marijuana side against Proposition 64, the initiative coming up on the ballot in 3 weeks. It's already on the ballot for you folks who are voting early with my absentee ballot. But some of the issues that came up were, I mean, I asked the question, you know, if won't this make it cheaper for people to who are poor to get marijuana for recreational purposes or medical purposes, because they won't have to go buy a medical card, and they won't have to get okayed by a club, and they won't have to go pay a doctor for a recommendation, which can be expensive. One of our members, one of the Huff activists, said, "Well, it's not hard to do." Another one said, "Prices will rise so much with cannabis cut back in terms of regulation and with growers being forced out." And also, something that hasn't been mentioned, doctors are going to be punished. You will no longer be able to recommend marijuana for minor ailments medically. It's all going to be thrown into the recreational area where you have to buy. You can buy it recreationally, but you can't. And you can only get it medically for severe ailments. That seems to be at least an allegation of those who are opposing Proposition 64. And hopefully we'll get more information on that. Or you yourselves, listeners, should go out and get more information on that. Don't wait for your leaders here in the media to lead you to the promised land. That ain't going to happen. You got to lead us to the promised land, or, you know, find the promised land and start shouting, and we'll see if we agree with you. So... one of the issues for low-income people is it going to be better for low-income people to have very limited legalization, because you're only going to be able to buy a small amount. You won't be able to carry it openly. That is, say, if you can't smoke a joint on the street.